Welcome everyone to the Dining Room Table Podcast, a weekly conversation that addresses taboos of the Black community. We emphasize vulnerability, transparency, and authenticity to change the narrative and the stigma of self-expression in our community. I'm your host, Keandria Rivers, and this week I'm joined by Mr. Silas David, a young Black man who's accomplished, successful, and motivated to be the absolute best version of himself while tackling real-life situations. Some of those situations include anxiety, depression, self-love, and more. People always say that nothing worth having comes easy, and I believe that Silas's story is a testament and proof of that statement. Not only that, but it reminds us that hard work absolutely pays off. From Clay Coat on the south side of Atlanta all the way to the Cornell University, Silas, let's talk about it.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks again for hyping me up.
Yes. I had to let everybody know what was really going on because, you know, don't get it twisted.
Yeah, like I love Atlanta like so much. Like Atlanta is in my blood. Like I ride for Atlanta. Like I don't care when people ask me where I'm from. I expeditiously tell them like, "Hey, I'm from Atlanta." Like, and it's my pride and my joy.
Like, yes.
When you go like when you leave where you're from, mm-hmm. like it's just, it gives you an opportunity to really understand, like, you know, how, you know, your background really has influenced who you are. And so I'm just so grateful, like, to be from Atlanta. And like I ride for Atlanta every day, all day. Southside, Clay Cove, 30236,
yes.
That 678, all of that.
All of that. So with you being in New York, would you like, okay, so say if you needed to change your phone and you had to get a new phone and they said, "I'm sorry, sir, you're going to have to get a New York area code." What would your response be?
I think the response would probably be, "I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me." No, but like seriously though, because especially because, like, you know, none of my family mm-hmm. lives in Atlanta anymore. Like, you know, just those small things, those small, like, details, like, they provide right. me with comfort, you know, because it's that, like, even, like, my telephone number, it's a little mm-hmm. bit of stability, like, in my life, like, you know, given that, like, I'm in this season of, like, just continuous change.
Totally understand. Yeah. I totally feel you because I had a chance to work at UPenn over the summer. And so, of course, there were tons of people from all over the world, essentially. And so whenever I would say that I'm from Atlanta, it'll just be like, "Oh, okay, yeah." You know what yeah. I'm saying? It would be like they felt a sense of home just meeting me. And I'm like, look yeah. at that Southern hospitality right here. Just yeah. automatically yeah. Southern hospitality. And so, yeah, yo. Like you would meet people and they would, first of all, just hear me speak. And they're like, "Where are you from?" And I'm like, "Atlanta."
Yeah.
So yes, home is 100% where the heart is. Like, absolutely.
Yes, it is.
So speaking of home, can you kind of like tell us, because I kind of gave a little background on where you are right now, but could you kind of give us a little bit more and kind of let us know, you know, the family side of things for you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So my full name is Silas Osajemen David, and my father's from Nigeria. But before I was born, my father was actually deported. From there, my mom, she had to raise four kids by herself, and she struggled while doing that. But one night while she was working, she was a nurse. She fell down a flight of stairs, and from there she became permanently disabled, and that plunged us into poverty. And at 9 years old, I had to kind of really step up to the plate. I think at 8 or 9, I had to step up to the plate. I learned how to cook, so, you know, that I could, you know, help take care of my mom and, you know, help, you know, cook for, like, my ironically older brother. And Yeah, it was just a lot of different things that we had to like overcome. But, you know, with that, my mom, you know, she went through a lot, like mentally, like, you know, there were times like she didn't know, like how she, we didn't have enough food, or we didn't have a, we definitely didn't have enough money to like, to even, to really pay the bills. Like when I left for college, like our household income was, our annual household income was about $4,800. And so we only survived like by having like food stamps and Section 8 housing and Medicaid. But even with all of those things, it was still a struggle, like to just like pay a water bill or pay a light bill. And so my mom, like she went through a lot. It was her alone. She was like very depressed. And, you know, and in that regard, she turned very, she turned verbally and and emotionally abusive a lot of times. And in a couple of rare occasions, she was physically abusive. But again, like I said, she was just going through a lot. Around that same time, around 10 years old, I was sexually abused. And then also at the same time, that's when I started on this like long stint of having to like battle suicide ideation and depression and anxiety, and also suffering, still suffering from eating disorder. So from there, yeah, like it was just a lot. It was a lot to go through. I kept pushing. I think around, it was around 20 that I finally like, you know, kind of got better. I sought the help that I needed to kind of pull out of depression. And I only pulled out of depression after my final suicide attempt. And from there, I don't know, I just me specifically, like, you know, what brought me through that was specifically my faith. My faith has always like been the foundation of everything that I do. And I had to have it. Like growing up, like there were times we didn't even have food. Like we were literally hungry. Like we did not have food, or like we were on the verge of being like evicted from our home. And, you know, it would be my mom who like she would encourage us to like, you know, pray, or just to have faith, you know, that it would work out for us, you know, as she would try to like frantically figure out some type of solution. And it worked every single time.
Bless
like,
God.
You know, my success has been like a product of my faith. Like, you know, even me getting into like, you know, the school that I go to now, it's like just been me like stepping out on faith, even when everything told me that I probably shouldn't like do it. So that's you know where I'm at now. I graduated. I ended up going to school because I realized I didn't want to be poor for the rest of my life. And so I realized that, you know, I wasn't really that good at football. And I definitely couldn't play basketball. So I said, you know what, education just may be my way out of poverty. So I went to school. I gave it my all, did my best, graduated with my BA in political science with a minor in entrepreneurship from Valdosta State.
Yes, Blazer family.
And, yes. And now I'm
right. Right. Wow. So, listeners, as you can see, Silas definitely gave us an earful. He gave us an earful, and he's been extremely open, honest, transparent, vulnerable. And so now I just kind of want to just unpack a little bit, just kind of have some questions just to kind of see, you know, how we or how you lived and worked through all of that. First things first, so you said that you do have siblings, and so it's five of you total?
It's four of us all together.
Okay. Like,
including me, and then I have three brothers. My two eldest brothers, like they're about like they're close in age, and then there's like a 10 or like 12 or 15 year gap, and then it's me and my slightly older brother, who's about 2 years older than me. So it's like four of us in total, but there's like a gap between the four of us. Like we're divided in half.
Gotcha. So, I understand. So you are the middle child.
I'm the baby.
See, look. Okay, so I guess I didn't understand. You're the baby. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That just brings, like, an even bigger, like, I don't even know. Wow. Okay, so you are the baby of the group. Okay. Yeah. So, wow. That makes me kind of want to, like, reprocess everything that you were saying now, because that is so interesting. So, with that being said, how do they feel about where you are now? And how do you feel like your journey and all of the things that you have gone through is impacting them?
Well, I don't know how they feel. I don't have an awfully, like, really close relationship with, like, you know, with any of my brothers, just okay. to be completely honest with you. Like, I can go, like, months without, like, talking to any of them, and not out of, like, because of some type mm-hmm. of animosity, but just because that's just how our relationships, you know, my relationship with them, you know, it is, like, that's how all of our relationships are with one another. And so, but I think, I guess they would be okay. proud. I don't know. I've heard mm-hmm. it a couple times, but yeah, I think they're proud. And I would hope that, like, my success, what it means for them is that, you know, they're empowered to continue to like, do amazing things. Like, my brothers, one of my brothers, he is the one who is the third oldest, because I'm the fourth. I'm the youngest, so I'm the fourth one. My third oldest brother, he's not in school, okay. but he's working. He didn't go off to college. My second oldest brother, he didn't go off to college either. But he actually, he's doing really, really well, because he started in a mechanic shop and he kind of worked his way up. And now he's working for Porsche.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As an advisor. Yeah. And then my eldest brother, he's working as a fitness instructor. But, like, I was the first out of my brothers to go out to college. So I guess I feel like my success, hopefully, like, what it means for them, it definitely means that, you know, I want to help empower my brothers mm-hmm. in whatever way possible, because, you know, accumulating success, I realized it really is, it's a shallow way to go about, like, success if you're only in it right. for yourself, because at the end of the day, like, it runs out. I mean, yeah, you can buy nice mm-hmm. things, and you can, you know, buy clothes, and I don't know, there's a lot of things that you can do for yourself, but, like, that joy that you have is that lasting joy, I think, comes from making an even larger impact that, you know, goes beyond, you know, your individual
right.
life.
So that's good, because happiness, I look at it like, happiness is when you are, you know, like you said, purchasing all of the material things and buying the big house, the fancy car, all the clothes and jewelry. But joy, that is when you are helping yeah. others and you're seeing them smile, because there is nothing more precious than to be able to provide for those that you love and you care about and seeing them happy. Yeah. I know that even if you're, because you said you guys' relationship, you guys aren't the tightest, but I know that
yeah.
whenever you come home, or whenever you, you know, whenever you guys get together, it's all love. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Right. Definitely.
Right. Okay. So with that, I asked about your brothers. So, like, your parents, how are your parents feeling? What do your parents, you know, say? How's your mom?
My mom, she's doing pretty well. Like, my parents, they're still, I don't know. My parents are probably, like, I don't know if they're going to hear this or not. But,
hopefully.
You know, they're probably like, they're put, I can already hear my mom putting
my
business out there.
We love you, mama.
But, yeah. But my mom, she's, like, they're still struggling. You know, my mom, my dad, like, both, like, are still, my dad, what ended up happening was, he was deported, and so, but it was at 10 years old, my dad was able to come back, and my mom, like, you know, when she got disabled, like, on her job, like, you know, she got a settlement from her job, a small settlement, And she used a large proportion of that to like get my dad back. And if you have any like family that is like any family that's been born like, you know, in a foreign country, like you probably know how difficult it is like to for someone to come to the United States, especially for like, you know, the non-European mm-hmm. countries. Like how difficult it is to get them here and then like for them to even like just be established as like either like residents or citizens. So like my mom, like, you know, she wanted us to have our like dad right. in our life. That didn't like and so like he eventually came back, but the thing is that my dad, like, by the time he came back, he was up in age, and it was difficult for him to find a job. And so like that brought about a lot of like tension in our household. And so like when I met my dad when I was first 10 years old, but like I only lived with my dad on and off for about 2 or 3 years, and probably in total it probably totals about like 6 or 9 months out of those like 2 to 3 years, because it was just a lot of stress going on in the household. My mom, like, again, like, she had like a lot going on with not just like, you know, figuring out how to function, mm-hmm. like, you know, being like a disabled person, but in addition to that, like trying to figure out how she was going to like support our family. But then my dad, like, not being able to like to find a job, like, my dad, like, you know, he's pretty accomplished, like, too. Before I was born, he had his own business, and he was actually, and he has an MBA.
Oh, okay.
But like literally when he got back, because he was gone for so long, like, and there was so much technological advancement in that 10-year period,
right.
like the best job, I remember the best job that he ever found was literally the assistant manager, like at a Family Dollar, but they ended up firing him.
Wow.
So like my dad ended up like going across like the country, like and leaving like permanently. Not leaving like the country and not leaving us permanently, but leaving Georgia permanently. And so right now they're still struggling, and it's difficult for me because like I'm here, like even like at Cornell, just like financially independent. And sometimes like, you know, my family, like they, even though like it's been my first semester of graduate
yes.
school. So I haven't like worked. You know, I've been like living off of like a little money that I have left from my financial aid. But like, my family, like sometimes like they'll call me and ask me like, you know, if I can help them. And they're doing pretty good. But it's still like, you know, a little rough, you know, for all of us.
Okay. So as far as graduate school, as far as graduate yeah. school and as far as when you are there, first of all, I'm sorry, I didn't even ask, what are you studying at Cornell?
I am getting my I'm currently getting my master's of public administration with a concentration in economic and finance policy, and maybe I'll, you know, look to, you know, get another degree down the line.
Okay.
But yeah, that's the degree that I'm getting right now.
Okay. And so quickly, because I don't really know that much about public administration. So like, exactly what is that? Could you tell us?
So public administration is just basically like business administration, except for like, you know, the public sector. Like, so nonprofit organizations, like, you know, government, like it's basically like an MBA for government and nonprofit organizations, pretty much, or non-governmental organizations.
Okay.
So it gives you like the tools, like in the skills necessary to effectively operate, like, you know, governments and just large nonprofit organizations,
okay.
like the American Red Cross, or, you know, I don't know, just whatever nonprofit you
okay.
think of.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Now, what kind of sent you in the direction of public admin? So what was your degree in at from Valdosta?
My degree at Valdosta was I got my political science degree with a minor in entrepreneurship. Got it. And I decided to pursue an MBA because I wanted to get by the time I was graduating, or by the time I was like, because like I mentioned to you earlier, mm-hmm. like, you know, when I went off to college, I was like, okay, education, this has to be my key out of poverty. And so because of that, I had already set up in my mind before I even started my bachelor's program that I was going to go like straight through, and I was going to go all the way up to a terminal degree and get a PhD. Mm-hmm. And so, so by the time I was like in my third year of college, I started looking into graduate programs. And I initially was looking at an MBA, but I realized that I didn't have like the work experience. And I definitely didn't want to take a break from school, because like I said, I'm just really passionate about like education. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for me, it's, you know, again, like I said, my way out of poverty. So I decided to go with an MPA. And I decided to use the MPA and like kind of mold it in a way to like, you know, best shape my aspirations like for the future, which is business. So.
Gotcha. So I love that you were saying that you kind of set a goal, like your goal was your education, or becoming and being educated was your key. That was your key to success. I love that. And I want to know, as far as, you know, because it seemed like you were pretty set. You were, you know, you had already made up your mind, and that you were also looking into different programs while you were at Valdosta, right?
Yeah.
So not only were you studying to receive your bachelor's, but you had already, you know, planned out what you were going to do. Now, we have the only school that you applied to. Kind of walk us through that, because we want to know.
The craziest thing is that you mentioned this kind of goes back to faith. Like, I when I first looked into graduate schools, like Cornell was probably like my first choice. It was my first choice, and I remember like, but I was like, oh my gosh, like that's Ivy League, like I can't, like I'm not good enough for that, like there's no way. But I don't know, it's like, it's very interesting, like for me, like I'm a man of faith, and so it's funny like how like everything was like in you know, for me to just, if can I just be
no honest? Please. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Please.
So I remember my when I was a sophomore, like toward the end of my sophomore year of college, mm-hmm. I was really, really, really adamant about pledging a specific organization.
Okay.
And I wanted it so, so bad. But I could never find like a piece of heart about it. Like it was just like a lot of confusion. One day I would be like, yeah. Next day I'd be like, no. Right. And like, I was like, I knew I was doing it for the right reasons. I knew that what my goals were aligned with that organization, mm-hmm. but I just never had a piece of heart about it. And so I remember I finally, after like 6 months of like really wrestling with like wanting to join this organization, I prayed to God and I said, God, if this is not what you want for me, like, you know, change my focus. And then literally, amen. Like, you know, a week later, someone, you know, sat me down, and we had a conversation, and they basically said, you know, like these Ivy League institutions, like, you know, they have like, you know, plans in place, like to like help people like us get there. And so I thought about it, you know, for a brief moment, mm-hmm. and I realized that it would, the same amount of effort that I would have to put in to like join like that specific organization, that specific fraternity, is the same amount of effort that would be required in order for me to get to like Cornell.
Yes.
Because I would, and so I realized that in that moment, like just thinking long term, I realized it was like, I think this is God changing my focus.
Right.
And so like after that, I was like, okay, like, you know, I'm going to, you know, look into like these like really, really prestigious schools. And Cornell came up because, like, I, at the time, over the summer, I was working for Waffle House, and, like, you know, I was like a server, and I was the best server. But, like, two of the people, like, surprisingly, you know, I'm in Clayco,
right?
So, like, you know, I'm walking, I'm like working at this like Waffle House off the side of the like the interstate, and like just randomly, like these, like there's this first instance like in the summer where like this person who like has this Cornell gear,
wow,
like, comes in, and it's literally one of the schools that like one of the top schools that I'm looking at, like at the moment, yeah. Like I was like, okay, this is probably most likely the school that I want to go to, and I have a conversation with them. And I'm asking him, like, and I'm like, he's like trying to order his food, and I'm just like, so what was it like? You know, yes. Can you give me advice and all this other stuff? And like, he, you know, tells me, like, gives me, you know, a brief, like, you know, insight into, as to like how it's like at Cornell. And so like, that was really encouraging. But then, a couple weeks after that, someone else who actually graduated from like Cornell Law, like that May, had
wow, so they were like brand spanking new, fresh
and
out.
Like, I know, and I was like, oh my god, you go to Cornell, that's one of the schools that I want to go to. And she was just like, yeah, like, and she gave me some encouraging words, like, she told me, like, you know, you should do this, you should do that. She gave me her number, told me to reach out to her, like, you know, if I need help with anything. And so I was like, from that moment, I was like, okay, like, I really feel like this is where God wants me to go. So, you know, that December, that was, so then after that, I like ended up leaving Waffle House because I had to go back to like school to finish my last year. I was supposed to be studying for the GRE, you know, during that semester, to take it at the end of the semester, then to go off and, you know, apply for Cornell. What ended up happening was, is that like, I was so like just bogged down by like the stress
life
of
things.
The semester. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't really end up studying that much. And so I ended up taking the test, the GRE, which is what you have to take in order to get into like the program. And I remember I was so overwhelmed. I barely had prepared for the test, like in the way that I wanted to. Like, I put in some effort, but I didn't put in as much as I wanted to. And like, I just remember going through like one section, realizing that I had like literally guessed on every last question, and I just literally walked out, canceled my scores. And I remember talking to like my best friend, and I was just like, I was just telling her afterward, I was just crying. I was like, oh my god, like, this is like, it's all over for me, like, what am I gonna do? And you know, I was like, well, you know, I guess Cornell isn't for me.
Wait a second. So you mean that you know, scheduled the GRE, you actually went in to take the GRE, but you walked out mid-test?
I walked out mid of the test, canceled the score.
Oh my goodness.
And even the lady was talking about me. She was like, there's no way he finished that test. Like, he was only in there for like 30 minutes.
Right.
I'm like, dang, Betty, mind your business.
So,
but,
oh my goodness. Okay. So, like you said, in those moments, you were shaken up. You were, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm not going. I was like, I was like, no, I'm not going to Cornell. I'm not, and I'm definitely not taking that test again. And the crazy thing is that I was like, so I started looking at other programs that didn't require like the GRE after like I like picked myself up from the like floor from crying. And so I applied for schools like Johns Hopkins, George Washington University, Rutgers, Indiana University, Bloomington. And like, those were really, really great schools.
Right.
And you know, I got offered like some really good packages from those schools. I got accepted, and they didn't require me to take the GRE.
Yes.
You know? But then, I remember having a conversation with one of my close sisters. Like, she, we met at camp. She's my sister in Christ. And again, when I say camp, it's this job we worked like a couple years ago. And we just all kind of forged a really close bond. But I remember, like, you know, in like February of 2019, she was telling me, she was just like, yeah, I'm applying for Harvard. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I just kind of brushed it off.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, okay, you know, you know, hope, good luck with that. And then literally like a month later, like I find out, and she never mentions it again, but I like, it's her birthday. And so like, I'm getting ready to like shout her out. Mm-hmm. And like, so I'm trying to find a picture. So I go to her Instagram page and I realized like, and I saw she got accepted into Harvard. And I was like, what? Yes. I'm like, this is crazy. And I was like really happy for her. But then in that moment, like I felt God tell me like, hey, like this is like, you need to, now you,
this
need to
could be you.
Yeah.
This could be you. Right.
Yeah, God was like legit, like, okay, now it's time for you to apply for Cornell. And I was like, no. I was like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not, because I have to retake the GRE.
Right.
And I literally just walked out. And God was like, nah, you know, this is, I mean, you just have to go for it. And so what ended up happening was I ended up spending like all this time, like, you know, preparing for the test. And one thing I realized is that first of all, because I'm coming from like the hood, and like the school system I'm coming from is not really that great.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of things that I did not learn in school that I was supposed to learn.
Right.
Like, but like literally, like in a lot of low income neighborhoods, they literally pass you along.
Yep.
Like, without like making sure that you actually know the stuff.
That you've mastered the content.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so so I ended up like retaking the test. Like I studied like, you know, as much as anyone else like would study like for the test, like how, like the normal suggestion, like I was studying like, you know, maybe like 4 to 8 hours every week for like, you know, 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And
ooh,
then,
that is a lot of studying. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I literally went in and I took the test in April. And it's crazy because right before I was getting into Cornell, but right before I applied for Cornell, I had like got all these like, you know, acceptance offers and these scholarships offers. And I remember like, you know, people would, you know, ask me, okay, what are you doing after graduation? And I said, okay, I'm going to graduate school.
The dreaded
and
question.
They, yeah. Like, and they would be like, you know, okay, so where are you going? I said, Cornell. And I had not even applied for the school yet.
Amen.
Let alone had taken the GRE.
Come on, Faith.
And so literally and I remember it got to a point where like people were starting to get like a little hesitant, like my boss, like who's like, you know, supported me and like loved me and like really poured into me, like in that final year of college for me. He was like, he even like, you know, he said, hey man, like, you know, I know that you have like this faith that you're going to Cornell, but I don't want you to pass up like all these other good opportunities that are in your way. Cause I was basically like rejecting all of these other schools because even for a school that I had not even applied to yet. And I wasn't even sure that I was going to get into, but I was like, you know, I understand that, but listen, sometimes I told him, sometimes God gives you a vision that, you know, other people won't
Amen.
Be able to understand.
Yes.
And so literally I ended up taking the GRE and I literally tested in the bottom 16th% and for math and the bottom 33% for like verbal, like, which is kind of like reading and, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, normally for a lot of my cohorts, like, you know, it's funny because like, you know, we talk about it. Most of my cohorts, these are people who've tested in the top 90th. And 95 like percentile, meaning that they've done better than 95 90. I know a couple of people who tested in the 99th percentile, meaning they did better than 99% of the people who took the test. I tested in the bottom, like, you know, 16th percent, like for math, and 33% for like reading. And like I remember walking out of that test, and like I mentioned to you, I studied, like mm-hmm. I did everything that I could, like I did what like would normally be suggested, and I was so discouraged. But in my head, I remember like, okay, I have two decisions. I can either sit here and cry and lose my faith and just give up, or I can like, you know, boss up, you know, and
right?
Just trust that this is what, you know, God has for me. And I decided to boss up. And I, you know, still pushed through, ended up turning in my application about like a week or maybe like a couple of days before the deadline. Like, and this deadline's been open for like an entire year. Come to find out, like about a week after graduation, that I got in. And not only did I get into the program, but they offered me like one of their high scholarships. And so like that's and so now I'm here. Like,
you're here.
And despite like my scores, despite like, you know, all of the adversity, like I made it here. And
yes.
And I'm not just here, but I'm also like thriving. Like I've done like really well here. So that's my story of how I got here. I know that was really long.
No. I am just basking in all of your glory right now, because God is so intentional, and it's so interesting because you pray to him to realign your focus if the organization was not where you were supposed to be. And yeah. He gave you about 4 to 5 other lessons, and in one being able to proclaim like to your manager, like, hey, God, you know, this is God. It's nothing that I'm doing. It's all him. So I'm going to continue to have this crazy faith for his word and his promises, because those will never fail. And so I'm just so grateful that you continue to say yes, and you continue to do those things that other people, like you said, when you have a vision, other people may not be able to see it. And that's okay. Because the same vision that God placed within you is yours. And so as long as you are obedient and you continue to say yes to him, he will make a way.
Yeah.
And there's a quote or a meme that's going around on Instagram that says that favor will take you way further than a
remedy. Yes, yes. It's crazy. And I'm telling you, that's so true.
Yeah.
I literally, like, you know, when I got here to Cornell, like, I'm taking economic and finance policy. Like I told you, like, that's what my concentration is. Yeah. Like, it really is difficult. And like I just told you, I tested in the bottom 16% for, like, you know, for math. Like, and one of the main things that I really struggle with is just basic college algebra, because going back to high school, I was never like taught.
You would, I never,
no one ever made sure that like we actually learned it. Actually, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, in a lot of these low income neighborhoods, they're not even preparing like these students to go off to college. They're preparing them just to graduate.
Just to graduate high school.
Whereas like in a lot of more like affluent communities, like students, like by sophomore year are already like, you know, figuring out, okay, what school do I want to go to? You know? But we weren't thinking about that, like, you know, in high school. That's just, just from my own personal experience. But like, I struggled, and like, you know, it's been like really difficult. And I literally just finished my first semester, like taking classes like microeconomics. Like, it was so difficult, so hard, and taking classes like finance and management. Like, and I finished my entire semester with all A's.
Praise like God.
And like, literally, I did better than a lot of the same people who tested in the top 90th and 95, like 95th, like percentile for the test that I bombed. You know, and so it just really just shows like how, like, I don't know, when you just trust God, like, I know it just seems crazy, but like literally my entire life.
And cliche.
Yeah.
It seems like, so cliche. Yeah. And I think oftentimes people who are of the Christian faith and who believe in Jesus wholeheartedly, like myself, and you, of course, it's interesting because I sometimes feel like when I say certain things like the favor will take you further than your resume, or God will, you know, never fail on his promises, those things, people look at you like, what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or be realistic. And it's like, this is as real as it's going to ever get.
Yes.
Because statistically, you know, shown, I wasn't supposed to be here. You know, I wasn't supposed to make it here. And so now you're here and you're doing better. And it's not to say that you are better, because you know that you aren't.
Right.
But you are chosen. You're chosen to be here, and God is not a God of confusion. And so when he placed you where you were supposed to be, which is Cornell, to be able to meet those people who may have had more as far as material things, or, you know, may have been more prepared in society's eyes, you know, look at you now, because the one, the only one who has, you know, the final say for your life and for your and the trajectory of your success is God. And so you're here and you got all A's. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Like, it's literally
congratulations.
Like, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's like people, I remember like when I first started, like, I remember one of my, the vice president, I'm not going to put him out there. One of the administrators at like, at Valdosta. I remember my senior year, like, they asked me, hey, so what are you doing after graduation? And I was like, yeah, I'm applying for all these different schools.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I was applying for Cornell. And I remember there was a pause after I said that.
Mm-hmm.
And they responded by telling me, maybe you should look into schools that are in Georgia.
No way. No
and,
way.
And it's just, it's crazy to me. Like,
no
again,
way.
It goes back to what, like you said, like, not everybody's going to understand mm-hmm. what God has placed on the inside of you. Not
yeah.
everyone's going to understand the vision, because listen, if it was for everybody to understand, maybe everybody should be doing it.
Right. Right.
But like, sometimes like God gives you something that like, it, like that only you will understand, and you have to like press your way.
Glory.
And you have to like push past what everyone else is telling you, what even the situation, because literally, like you said, I'm not supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
The schools like this are not made for like literally
for
I
us.
Have a cohort. Yeah.
For
I have a cohort who reminds me constantly. He tells me like, do you know, out of like all the Ivy League graduates, like you're like, we account for like less than, I think he said either less than, I think he said less than 1%.
My God.
Out of every Ivy League graduate, like Black people count, I think he said for either less than 8% or less than 1%. Like, that's
mm.
crazy to me.
Mm.
So like, it just shows that like, you know, when you're determined and like, you know, and you're obedient to like, you know, that inner truth or that inner guide, like you'll go far.
Yeah. That this is great, and it's so interesting and so funny, because prior to this conversation, I prayed and I said, God, have your way. Whatever it is that you want to be portrayed here today on this conversation, I want you to do it. And so it's super duper interesting, because I have so many other questions for you, but I feel like we are serving our purpose here.
Yeah.
One of my main questions was, how critical is your faith to success? And that was, you know, a little bit further down into the story, but here we
yeah.
are. We are showing, and you are showing and exemplifying how important it is to hold on
yeah.
To your faith. Now, I do want to kind of switch gears and ask, because even though, you know, numbers and statistics show that you shouldn't be there, do you ever feel inadequate, or do you ever feel less than simply because you are outnumbered there? How is that? Are you welcome? Do people kind of, you know, give you, like, what's the atmosphere like? How are you?
I'm reminded of, first of all I would like to say that, you know, I had it rough like growing up, but like literally I still consider like everything that I've been through or
mm-hmm.
my life compared to so many people around the world, like, you know, poverty in America versus poverty around the world is like completely different. And so I think that I'm very blessed. Even no matter how difficult like I've had it, like I still consider myself very, very blessed and very, very fortunate. But like being here, it's difficult. It's not, I'm not even going to lie to you. There are some days, like there are literally some days like in the semester, like I would like literally like cry. And what makes it so difficult is not only was I constantly having to deal with like this internal voice that tells me like, you're not good enough. Because that's literally basically my entire life, like, you know, being told that I'm not good enough,
mm-hmm.
like rather directly, but it was mostly like just inadvertently, like being told that I was not good enough. Even like that quiet, that subtle like pause, and maybe
right.
look into like, you know, schools in Georgia, you know, just things like that. I've been
microaggressive
told that, like,
things.
Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
and so here, like, it's not been like any easier. It's been like very difficult, because a lot of the people here, you know, they go through like a lot of things. Like, everyone has their own problems and their own issues, like, but there's very few people who can understand what it is to not just come from like being from a marginalized racial group, but just a marginalized group in regard to like, you know, finances, like, you know, because I'm a low income like Black male.
Mm-hmm.
And not too many, first of all, there's not too many Black people here.
Right.
Secondly, like, you know, there's definitely, even within like, you know, the Black people that are here, there's not even a lot of people who can identify with what it means to really get it from out of the mud, or like
mm-hmm.
not come from like a really
money. A well-off place.
Right.
You know, so it's been so hard. It's been so difficult, but like I've had to like press through that, and I've had to like realize that my journey and like my struggle is what has made me who I am. It's like when I first got here, I was thinking to myself, like, oh, these people are going to be like the smartest people.
Mm-hmm.
These people are going to be like, you know, the hardest workers. Because I've literally been told for like the last couple of years, I was like, you know, people used to say, like, you're such a hard worker. I didn't believe it because I was just like, I thought that everyone.
That this is the norm. This is the standard.
Yeah. Like, when, right. if you want to be successful, this is what
this
you
is
do.
What you have to do. Uh-huh.
I literally. I'm telling you, I got to Cornell, and like it's a facade. Like it literally mm-hmm. is a facade. A lot of the people that you see in these positions of power
mm-hmm.
in these like really prestigious schools, it's not because like they're better like than like us, like who come from like, you know, a lot less prestigious schools,
right?
Or like who like come from like a lot less affluent backgrounds. Like it's just that like, you know, they were lucky. Like
yeah.
they were lucky yeah. to come from a good community or come from a good family. Like, and they don't all come from like, you know, extremely rich families,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they come from like good neighborhoods, like with a good school system.
Right.
And I realized that like in my working hard, I realized that like, just because like these people are here, that a lot of them are lazy. A good amount of them are lazy.
Yeah.
You know, I know like probably like 5 dozen people at Valdosta State University, which no one knows here. People are like, where'd you go?
Of course.
I'm like, Valdosta State, Valdosta? Where's
right,
that?
Right, like, where's that?
I had to respond, like, no, I'm talking about the Valdosta State.
Right.
Oh, yes, it's in this splendid, you know, institution in South Georgia.
Yes.
You'll look it up later. Not
uh-huh.
But like literally, like I know like so many people at Valdosta who will literally blow these people out of the water because mm-hmm. like, again, that work ethic and like and just like you mentioned, like, you know, favor as well. Like, so I think like it was a huge wake up call like for me. Like I was like enchanted with this idea of like going to like an Ivy League. I love like Cornell, like it's been such a blessing for me because
mm-hmm.
like it's opened the door for like a lot of different things and a lot of different resources, but it also made me realize like that, you know, these people that you see at the top, like, you know, you think that like they're all smart, you know, they're all like super super smart, but you know, really, to be honest with you, not saying that they're like dumb, I'm just saying that like they're not, you know, smarter like than
yes.
the average. They may test well.
Right.
They may test in the top 90th percent, but at the end of the day, like a lot of them, that same person may not have like the tenacity to actually like, you know, do something. Because
right.
a lot of them, like, you know, have been handed like a lot.
I was just about to say, like more often than not, their lives were handed to them on silver platters. So when it comes to, like you said, getting out of the mud and trying to be the best and making sure that they are working up to that standard is kind of like not a thing for them. So I'm totally, totally understanding what you're saying there. Yeah. It's also interesting that you say that, because I mean, that's kind of what is interesting, because most times we all have people who go to Ivy Leagues on pedestals.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And so you think automatically like, oh, they're going to be so much better than me. And it's like, no, believe in yourself.
Right.
So I say to you now that even though this was your first semester, and I'm so extremely proud of you for earning all A's in those difficult times. And I just want you to know that you are enough and that you are amazing and that I am extremely, extremely proud of you. We now are on this journey together. So, and I will also tell you that anytime you post, I just want to say that you are like the epitome of Black boy joy. Like, I love your Instagram post. I love when you are so transparent in, you know, those moments, because I did see where you were saying that you have been feeling kind of, you know, kind of inadequate
Yeah, definitely.
You are enough. You definitely are enough. And your work, and like we said, your work ethic and that favor, nothing to play with, nothing at all to play with, honey. So I just kind of want to touch on a few things before we go, though. I just want to know, who are some people, because I know that you mentioned best friends and sisters and things like that. Who are some people that have had a positive impact on your journey thus far, but then also in helping you get through this semester? Have you made any, you know, close friends at Cornell, or are there people from Valdosta? Like, who are those people?
I definitely feel like who gotten me this far?
Yes.
Definitely, literally probably every single person from I don't want to put, you know what, from, you know, that the coworker who was with me, who worked with me at a Waffle House that one summer, who gave me hell and who treated me so badly for no reason. Like, she contributed to my success.
Wow.
From my mom, like, to the administrator who told me to look into, like, you know, schools in Georgia.
Right.
Like, to the person who introduced me to the idea of even going to an Ivy League school.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, I couldn't even put limitations on, like, you know, the people who've impacted my life, like, because it's just so many. Like, rather it's, like, you know, in a directly positive way, or, you know, in a directly, like, negative way, it all, right, at the end of the day, it all worked together, like, you know, to bolster me, to, like, make me better, and to, like, make me who I am today. As of, like, right now, I've made, like, some, like, you know, friends here. Like, I'm a pretty social person. Like, I haven't, like, really, you know, developed, like, you know, the closest of friends here.
Right.
Most of my,
you've, like, been working too hard. You've been working. You're busy.
Yeah. here at Cornell, because, like, there's not really a lot of us. You know, I don't want to be, you know.
No, B.
You know, the black.
No,
you know,
look, no,
you know,
B,
the black,
please,
folks. You know, I realize that we stick together.
It's slim. Yeah, I understand.
You know, so
yeah.
we have a comment. So there's definitely, like, that, a sense of support, like, within that. Like, you know, of course, like, you know, from Valdosta, like, my best friends, like, Chelsea. Chelsea Smith, like, Raven Jackson, like, they've been my rocks. Like, like, my best friends, like, from all over, like, who live in different places, like, in the country, like Devin and, like, Anthony. It's just, like, just most of my support really comes from people who are not, like, here.
Gotcha.
There's like a subtle layer of support here at Cornell. But, like, when I'm going through, like, when I'm literally, like, at my wit, like, you hear me now, but, like,
yeah,
this is, like, but when I'm at my, like, base, or when I'm at, like, my worst, like, you know, and I'm, you know, cussing up a storm, and I'm just mad, or I'm crying, and I'm like, I'm sick of this, I'm leaving.
This is it, I'm over it.
I'm done, I quit. Like, you know, those are the people who literally, like, hold me down. Like, those people that, like, I've known for, like, the last year, the last 2 or 3 years or 4 years. Like, those, it always goes back to them. Like, those close, like, those handful. And I don't have a lot of, like, super, super close friends. But it's, like, those, like, that handful of, like, people that you can always turn to. They're the people, like, who, like, empower me to, like, keep going. So.
Love it. I love it. I love it so much. I'm so glad that you were able to, you know, shout your people out, as we call them. And I'm glad that they have your back. So, moving forward, if there was a young black boy, to be more specific, who has the same aspirations, who may be living in Clay Cole, or maybe living in, you know, a rural area, just anywhere, listening to this podcast, and you could just say anything to that child and they don't know where to begin, what would you say?
My best advice for anybody, that black boy, that black girl, that black woman, that black man, is, like, to trust, like, God. And when I mean trust God, I want to, like, talk specifically.
Okay.
Like, I think a lot of times, like, we think that, like, the blessing or the miracle or, like, that sign or that wonder that God is going to do in our life is, like, some external thing. But this process has made me realize that everything that you need to accomplish those goals, like everything that you need to be the person that you know that you're called to be, that person that like you envision yourself being, is within you already. Like it's just a matter of those things growing. Like me getting to Cornell, like it was some people had planted seeds on the inside. Like from birth, there were seeds that were planted on the inside of me. Absolutely. And it was through challenge after challenge and good time and after good time and talk after talk those seeds were nourished. And eventually those seeds, like after they sprouted underneath the ground, like they penetrated the surface. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of people are seeing right now. And so I would just like say, like trust God in the sense of everything that you need to do what you want to do, to accomplish what you want to accomplish, is already within you. The blessing is already here. That miracle Amen. Is already here.
Amen.
That's the greatest advice I can give.
Absolutely, because you're here. And so if you're here, then the blessing is here. You have to just pull all of those things from inside out and let your light shine.
Right.
Good stuff. Right. This has been an awesome conversation. I have a proverb to just kind of put here to seal this deal. Just when the caterpillar thought the world was ending, he turned into a butterfly. And I know that this is not the end of your story, simply because you are, like I said, young, you're accomplished, you're still accomplishing, and you have everything inside of you in order to be successful. I am, like I said earlier, I'm super, extremely, tremendously proud of you. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful to have had you be able to open up here at the dining room table. I'm rooting for you. I am sure once everyone hears this episode, everyone will be rooting for you. And so with that, can you please allow or could you share your Instagram so that people can follow to kind of make sure that they are rooting for you throughout this journey? Because
my Instagram is Silas, that's S-I-L-A-S .o.david, that's D-A-V-I-D, that's Silas.o.david.
And I will also put his Instagram handle in the show notes. You guys, this is absolutely a testament to hard work and faith, dedication, motivation, drive, and like I said, faith. So this has been another episode of The Dining Room Table. I am your host, Keandria Rivers. Once again, thank you so much, Silas. I appreciate you for being here.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
It's absolutely an honor. Absolutely. Thank you so much.